This is the Geek Improvement Podcast. Tune in. Geek out.
Welcome to the Geek Improvement Podcast, the official podcast of geekimprovement.com, helping you find and keep track of the things you, yes you, geek out about. I'm Alexi Santos, and to my left is Zach Erickson.
Hello, it's been 2 weeks.
It has been.
We skipped last week, and I'm ready to go.
We've had a good record. We haven't skipped a podcast until last week, but somehow life got in the way. You were busy with school, I was up in Massachusetts, and then defending my thesis, so actually, if you were wondering, possibly, how the sound...
I was.
Oh, you were? Good. How the sound... Thank you, Mr. Erickson. It's we could almost be on a TV show to sell something like the ShamWow and infomercial, but anyway.
Tell me about it, Alexis Santos.
Well, Zach, this is the sound of a completed thesis.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, man.
And it went well? Like, you defended it with your honor? You defended your thesis's honor and everything?
I was stripped of my clothing. There was a hole dug in front of the archaeology lab. I was handed a very sharp spear, and a jaguar from the Yucatan Peninsula was flown up here, and I had to fight it, and my thesis was my shield.
Wearing nothing but a jaguar print loincloth?
That may or may not have gotten lost, but yes, I escaped unscathed, and I passed, so graduation is coming up soon.
That's awesome, dude. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Congratulations.
I also am done mine. I don't have a thesis, to defend, but I am finished. I'm now actually getting paid to work in the same lab I was studying at, and I'm starting my master's
awesome.
In the fall in the same lab, so, yeah. It's good feeling to be done.
Oh, yeah. After 4 years, man. But anyway, enough about school geek stuff. We got to jump right into the geek homework. If you have been living under a rock, you probably have also heard of the Avengers, because it's been everywhere. It's busted records in terms of box office revenue. In, what, the first weekend, it made over $200 million. That's,
Yeah, it's... Well, dude, wow. I think it's... Worldwide, since and now the rest of the world, it was up to 700,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken,
earlier in the week. Yeah,
yeah, like $700 million. It's insane.
Yeah, soon to reach a billion or more if it hasn't already.
But yeah,
what'd you
like,
think?
It's insane.
I mean, after all this time waiting, since you know the Incredible Hulk in what 08. Now we
yeah, like the summer, you know, like the very first summer where it's in the end of Iron Man 1 where Nick Fury's like, oh, we're going to do the Avengers or whatever. Like we've been waiting for a long time. And I don't know. Maybe you should go first. You go first. What was your walk away from it?
In terms of satisfying or not satisfying, I'm totally and completely satisfied. I mean, I love the movie. It was great. It gave you all the battle scenes that you wanted. It gave you lots of jokes. It had all the characters in there. And while it's not the most amazing movie I've ever seen, the best way I can put it was completely and totally satisfying from a kind of comic geek movie perspective. I mean, they pulled it off amazingly.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting because it's... Now, would you say it was your favorite in the entire series?
Yep, totally. Hands down.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think my biggest... Now, I loved it too. Like, everything you just said, absolutely agree.
Mm-hmm.
But I came away... I don't know if I just was a victim of overhype, mm-hmm. But I came away from it wanting more as far as the characters are concerned. I think... My biggest concern, one of the biggest challenges for this movie going in was that every single one of these characters is strong enough and interesting enough that they can carry an entire movie by themselves. And
yeah.
So to put them all into a movie together is really difficult because you end up not not getting as much as you're used to from Tony Stark or from, you know, Thor or all those characters. However, and it was really, I don't know, it just left me feeling like, oh man, really? It's almost like the characters became a caricature of themselves.
Yeah.
And not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but you never really get into the deep sort of characterization that you would get in Iron Man, for example, where you really get to understand the character a little bit better.
Well, I'm not sure we ever got very deep character development in Iron Man. I mean, there was some for sure, but I really liked it. I think Joss pulled off a good balance. You know, we got to see Iron Man, Tony Stark, pull off a lot of jokes. Then there was a lot of focus on the relationship and specifically the tension between the characters, and then, of course, the resolution, and then the glorious, wonderful ass-kicking at the end. And this is the... Okay, well, remember my complaint a couple weeks ago from after I'd just watched Thor? I thought, you know, the first half of the movie, they pulled it off great, and then they realized, okay, we got something good going here. We just... It's time to wrap it up, boys. It's 8 o'clock, and I want to be home by 10. So they kind of like, okay, so Thor gets his powers back by having a 3 to 5 minute fight, and then he goes home and he saves the day. Here, however, to save the day was what, a 40 minute or 45 minute fight? That
something like that, yeah.
That was awesome.
It was great. And it's interesting because going into this, I think his name's Kevin Feige or something like that. He was one of the producers.
Uh-huh.
When Transformers 3 came out, he basically made the statement saying, okay, we're taking what they have done, and we are taking that as a challenge to outdo them in just amazing action sequence, you know, and we want to really outdo them in that point. And when I heard that, I was like, uh-oh, that's not good, because I hated the last half hour of that movie because it was just so mind-numbing,
yeah.
Right? But what was interesting is if when you watch this action sequence in Transformers, it was crazy because it was just nonstop, like, oh no, we're still fighting, right? Whereas with Avengers, it was like, boom, here's like 2 or 3 minutes of action and fighting, and then probably and then story, cut to this two, little character moment, right?
Yep.
And then another couple of minutes of fighting, and then here's another character moment, and it really it broke up the fighting a little bit, which was really, I really appreciated that. Now there was a couple things in here that almost afterwards you. Like when I went back and kind of thought about it later and kind of read some stuff and listened to another podcast that reviewed the movie and things like that, mm-hmm. there were a few things that I did completely miss the first time. And just for now, like we're just going to say, if you haven't seen the movie, spoilers.
Oh, they're coming.
Yeah. Come on, go see the movie. What are you listening to this podcast for? But the scene in the helicarrier where they basically have the big argument and it's all of them in that room, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know the scene I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Just before he turns into the Hulk and everything goes down.
Yeah. Did you catch on to the fact that the scepter was what was causing the discord between all of the different people?
Sort of. I mean, it was behind them. And, like, he had it in his hand. I wasn't sure what the connection was, but it just, I thought, yeah, I didn't catch on to it. I thought, okay, Hulk has it in his hand. He's just going to go berserk. But you, sir, have explained something for me.
Yeah, because, right, like, I've seen it more than once now, and it's interesting because the first time I was like, oh, okay, well, why is everyone being so petty? Like, it seems they're almost out of character how petty these characters are being. Particularly, like, even Nick Fury is being really defensive towards Thor and stuff like that. But then when you go back and see that scene a second time where it's almost like that scepter is emanating this sort of mind control sort of thing, like what the scepter does, right?
Yeah.
To Hawkeye, for example. But it actually is causing them to get upset and things like that. So that there was a few moments like that where it was like, it would have been really nice if there was just one piece of dialogue there that kind of hinted towards it or something, right?
Yeah, I completely did not get that. But the movie still worked. I mean,
it definitely still worked, for sure.
Because I don't even think they needed the scepter to cause that kind of anger. I mean, you know, teamwork can be difficult, especially when you're dealing with Tony Stark. So that wasn't enough. That was enough of an explanation for me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So you took notes, or you have some notes now. I forgot to write down notes.
I do. Okay. Let's see. Some of them, I can't remember what in the world I was talking about. The first
so just
one
read it.
The first one on my list is forehead.
Forehead.
I have no idea. I'm thinking that means I facepalmed at some point, and I can't remember what it was. But my notes are usually just about little cool things or whatever, or things that I have issue with. And one of the cool things that I found, or that I saw, was the laptop. You know, those kinds of two-piece laptops where it has like a plastic or a glass screen, and like the bottom half is a keyboard, and it comes together, and you just like take off the top half and slot it into the bottom, and you got yourself a laptop. So cool.
That was pretty cool. And then he like just threw it out on, and it was like projected.
Oh man, I can't wait for something like that to happen. Okay, let's see. Oh yeah, I guess my notes are pretty short. It was mostly during the trailers. I guess my biggest gripe with the movie is no Edward Norton.
You think so?
Yep, totally.
I think that Ruffalo did a way better job than Norton did. When Norton was the Hulk, he came off really kind of quiet and whiny. And the whole crux, like they kind of teased the whole movie saying, "Oh, well, how do you control it? How do you control it?" And like when he hulks out during that big fight, he basically says, "Well, I'm always angry." And so he just kind of is always keeping a lid on it.
Uh-huh.
And he has this really sort of quiet intensity to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
That Norton didn't really have. Like, he wasn't really... Norton was just like this little scrawny guy, and he kind of... I didn't ever buy that he was really smart. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Ruffalo did a good job. It's just, from a standpoint of continuity, that the Avengers was all about continuity. You know, they were taking all this time to build up these different movies, and then I have this actor that I have not seen before, at least not seen before in, you know, in a comic book film, and they're trying to pass him off as the Hulk. When I know it's been a couple of years, but did Ed Norton really get like changed that much?
Right.
I don't know.
It's interesting because again, one of the producers they talked about it later, because we're getting to the point, especially with Iron Man, that Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. has been in three movies now, right?
Yeah.
And so he's getting to the point, he's only signed for four films. And so they've said, well, what are they going to do when Robert Downey Jr. is either too old to play him, or they, you know, he's out of contract and they decide to go with somebody else? Are they going to reboot the series, or what are they going to do? And Marvel has compared this, they're going to treat it the same way that they treat James Bond, where it's the character that we care about, and we're not going to tell the origin story again. We're just going to keep going. And so in that sense, I think we're going to see actors come and go in this universe, but that's a good thing. And that's the way we want it to,
you know,
that
actually provides an explanation to one of my biggest gripes. For example, we at the theaters, you probably saw a trailer for the new Spider-Man movie.
Right.
I just keep thinking, leave these things alone. Give them some time to breathe, you know, so not only so the films can have some time to breathe, and, you know, people can appreciate them more, but so people can have a break from these characters. I mean, we just saw them just a few years ago, and then now you're bringing out a new guy. I mean, at least a decade. I mean, I don't want to get like Iron Man out or anything, or Spider-Man out as I am with Spider-Man. But thinking about it like James Bond, that makes it easier for me to swallow.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's James Bond is one of the few characters where they have successfully continued on that name. And even though from actor to actor, the character might even be a little bit different, right? Like, for example, back in the old days, like Roger Moore versus Sean Connery versus Pierce Brosnan, like they all kind of had their own take on the character, but it was still James Bond, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, you still got James Bond regardless. So if they can take that and really nail down each character and have multiple actors do it in a slightly different way, I'm okay with that. I loved Ruffalo's Bruce Banner. I thought it was the best. He was like one of the best parts of the movie, in my opinion. Because he just kind of had like that sort of dry, snarky humor that was really endearing.
Yeah.
And almost self-deprecating. You know what I mean? Like it was really, really good. Go ahead.
For the flack that I gave him, I mean, I didn't really give him flack. Like I said, I liked the Hulk that he played. I just wish there was continuity after there's so much stress on it.
But I guess that's what you get when you are a total diva on set and, you know, eventually Marvel's just like, okay, forget it. I don't know exactly what happened, but apparently it's something along the lines of the fact that he said he wanted, or they asked him to come back for the same thing. Or maybe I'm thinking of a different actor. Never mind.
Well,
but basically he found out that it was not, he got totally the cold shoulder from Marvel. Marvel's not exactly nice about those kinds of things.
Yeah, from what I read, it seemed that there were, Marvel says he wasn't a team player, and then his agent says, well, it wasn't, that's not true. It was about money. Or something like that.
I think it was about both, really. I've heard things as well that he got into arguments with the director a lot,
and
stuff like that.
And then his agent says, "Oh, but I'm good friends with the director, Joss Whedon, and with the actors." But not to belabor the topic, something that I caught on to. I'm not sure if it was just like a running gag or like for example, in if you've ever seen the TV show Psych. You'll always see a pineapple hidden somewhere throughout the episode, like an Easter egg. But the mention of Portland, Portland, Oregon, right? Throughout the film, especially when they were talking to, what's his face? The dude who died. Coulson.
Coulson, yeah. Yes.
They mentioned Portland a few times.
And really?
In reference to a possible girlfriend or something.
The cellist girlfriend. That's right.
So I'm wondering, is that a hint? Is this something Joss Whedon always does? He wanted to mention Portland for some reason, or is that like a hint towards another comic book movie coming down the pike?
I think I don't know if it's either of those. I don't know Joss Whedon well enough to know if he would comment on Portland specifically or what. I don't know of anybody for Portland. It was interesting, though, that now it's funny. My wife just walked in the door and she actually hasn't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to say anything that's going to spoil the movie for her. Can you hear me, honey? Honey?
Just
I'm going to talk
loudly.
About Avengers. So and, if and I spoil this, I'm sorry. Okay. Anyways, the death in the movie. basically, it was. What did you think about that? Was that?
Oh, that was
good.
Cool.
Bad.
That I think. I was, sad to see him go, but I mean, he went a great way by killing stabbing Loki in the chest and not stabbing, no, blowing him to pieces and out the.
I love that gun, right? the destroyer gun from Thor, yes. Like the big destroyer guy.
That's pretty awesome.
It was pretty cool, but
blew a hole
it was funny
in the ship or whatever.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was interesting because that. Agent Coulson was such an interesting character. Like, he was really funny and really dry, but at the same time, it was almost like Marvel was like, okay, we need to give this guy a good send-off, but at the same time, we really can't afford to, this isn't a character that we really want to have in the movies that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they don't want to make...
He's not like an A-plus actor. He's funny and does what he does well, but we don't want to have him outstay his...
Stay his welcome.
Exactly. And he felt like he was getting close. And so I like that they let him out on a high note.
Yep. And also the whole collector's cards or trading cards, with
that was a nice touch. It was funny because the character was almost, especially in this one, he was so, I almost want to say childish. It was almost like they killed the child. You know what I mean? Like he wasn't like
oh, no.
Like they killed
Joss
the kid
Whedon kills child.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
It's kind of like in. Have you seen Serenity yet? The movie.
Oh, man, I need to do that.
Okay, never mind. I won't.
No spoilers. No spoilers.
Anyways, basically, it reminded me and people who, people in that in this in that movie, I won't spoil who it is, but in that movie, a character dies, and it reminded me a lot of that, just kind of that sort of a situation. And one of the characters dies near the end of the movie, and it really reminded me of that death there.
Oh, dang it. Now you're going to keep me guessing.
Now you got to go see it, dude. So anyway, but yeah, overall, I freaking loved it.
Yep.
And of course, at the end, right? Did you stay after all the way through the credits?
I did. And of course, as we've seen, shawarma sales have gone up. They've skyrocketed.
That's hilarious. And the mid credits thing, did you catch who that was?
Remind me.
Thanos.
Oh yeah. That guy. I don't know who it is. I just know it's another baddie.
Yeah, I don't really know a ton about him, but it's interesting because they're kind of pulling in characters that not everybody, you know, that the only
they
the most
name
intense geeks will know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool. From what I've read, he's gonna be pretty awesome. He's kind of as far as power goes, he's almost like, I would almost compare him, not in size, but in power, right? Mm-hmm. He's more of like, almost like a Galactus sort of, as far as how formidable he is. So pretty cool. So I'm really excited about that. It'll be interesting to see where this all goes. Especially because, I mean, next summer, we have Iron Man 3 already. And then I believe, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. So next summer, we have Iron Man 3. Next winter, so like November, December 2013, we have Thor 2. Ooh. And then summer 2014, we have Captain America 2.
And then another Avengers.
And then potentially Avengers. And then there's also other things, other potential movies that they're talking about doing. They're still talking about doing an Ant-Man movie, which... If that's going to be a tricky one to pull off, right?
Ant-Man, like, is just lame.
Yeah, it really is. But if, like, I think that if you advertise it as the next big hero in the Avengers franchise, it will do fine. You know what I mean? They're just going to have to bank on that name. It's going to have to just be marketed as part of the franchise.
That's like someone saying Superman's lesser known cousin, mildly amusing man. He's starting in his own movie, and it's going to be big. We've got a big budget, but it's mildly amusing man. You may or may not be mildly amused.
Yeah, and then they're talking about Doctor Strange is another one. He's like just this magician sort of guy, and then Guardians of the Galaxy, which I've actually never heard of, and then Avengers 2 has been confirmed that it's been greenlit basically. So.
And of course, we cannot forget on the DC side, The Dark Knight Rises this summer.
Right. That is coming. That's on its way. And also, what else is there? There's obviously Amazing Spider-Man, which I'm still a little bit worried about. I'm going to be honest. The more I see of it, the more I'm really worried about it. I don't know why.
Oh. And one last note about Avengers. I watched it in 3D. And I had a big discussion on Twitter with friends and folks who listen to podcasts as well. And pretty much everybody came down on the side of 2D, and so did I, because I really don't... I'm not all that impressed by 3D, at least not that often. Uh-huh. And I watched it in 3D because I was late to the theaters, and I had already missed like 15 minutes of the 2D version, so I thought, okay, why not? I'm not going to wait a whole hour to watch the next one that's lined up. So I go into the theater, and yeah, okay, 3D, was my thoughts of how it was used. However, throughout the movie, to compare, I would close one eye
right
for a couple of minutes and think, yeah, I don't really, it's the same movie for me in both 2D and 3D. Just
yeah,
wasn't all that blown away.
I don't know. Like, I just feel like, I think it's probably similar to the fact, or similar to the discussion that has been had recently about the 48 frames per second, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, yes, maybe it's a little bit more immersive. Yes, maybe it makes it look a little bit more like reality. But I'm sorry, just plain old 2D, 24 frames a second is just that it's different enough from reality that it's okay. Like you can just sit and watch it and it's enjoyable. Anything more than that, and it either sucks you in too much or it becomes a distraction.
It becomes a caricature almost.
Yeah, exactly. And so I would almost prefer to just keep stuff 2D. It really is frustrating to me that they don't do 2D IMAX anymore, that if you see it in IMAX, you have to see it in 3D. So,
but then again, we're also speaking out of habit, and this may take a few years for us to get used to or whatnot.
But, true, because actually the exact opposite is true for me with my 3DS, for example. When I play my 3DS, if I'm not using the 3D turned up all the way, I don't like how it looks at all. You know, it actually looks a lot crappier to me. And so I don't know. It's interesting.
Jesse says, I think the best 3D are those that are subtle and you forget you're watching 3D. And for me, I think part of it is the glasses. What annoys me isn't the fact that there are glasses. It's the fact that either A, I'm not used to viewing things through glasses, or B, also the fact that it's not like wraparound. Like I can tell that the effect isn't perfect. Like just around the edges, it's like I don't know. I need to be like seamlessly see this 3D. I don't know if that could be accomplished with better glasses or.
Well, it needs to be filmed in 3D as well, I think is really important because, like, if you don't film it in 3D and you do all this post-production stuff, it ends up coming out just looking like a pop-up book, you know, where it's just like, here's another flat layer and here's another flat layer. And it's not seamless. It's not like real life. And so it's not immersive. It's just distracting. You know, it's not like, whoa, this looks really good. It's like, this looks different. And I don't like that. I found that especially in Avengers. There's that scene that we talked about already where they're all on the bridge in the lab, right? Mm-hmm. And they're all having that argument and they're swirling around in 3D. I got so pulled out of that scene because I was like, oh my gosh, this looks just like a pop-up book with all these layers. So I don't know. It is much better in things like Pixar. Pixar does it great. But anyway, I think we're good. So overall, I would say thumbs up to the Avengers. Definitely. I would say it's...
Go watch it if you haven't already.
Oh my gosh, what are you doing if you haven't already? I would say it's my favorite, but for different reasons. If you're looking for a really deep story or really, you know, strong character moments, I think it's good... It's a really, really the best popcorn flick I've ever seen, period. But it's not going to be super deep. It's not going to be, you know, something that is super compelling. It's just, you know, it's exactly what you would think a comic book movie would be and should be. So
easing into some geek food, even though we don't have a bumper for that, the folks over at geekyhostess.com, remember the Marvel marathon that we mentioned a couple weeks back in preparation for the Avengers, where they had like a 12-hour marathon that would lead to a midnight showing of the movie? Well, they thought, you know, we're going to need some snackage during that period of time because we can't really subsist on Raisinets and Milk Duds and Sour Patch Kids or whatever. So...
And end up with like the worst raw tongue of your life.
Yes. So in order to, instead of giving you raw tongue, to give you a sustained sugar high, Tara over at Geeky Hostess made Mountain Dew cupcakes, and she's published the recipe online. So you essentially use the Mountain Dew as the replacement for the liquids in the cupcake recipe, and then you make Mountain Dew icing. I'm not sure how that would taste other than like Mountain Dew.
This sounds really, really good.
It does.
No, that'd be great. No, that's awesome.
Well, however, I imagine, you know what? I think this is a project for the next time I have a good break where I can go home is to try and make, I would just, whenever I imagine Mountain Dew in cooking, I imagine someone like hovering over like this big old pot with like 3 or 4 gallons of Mountain Dew and it bubbling away, like reducing into like this syrup. Imagine Mountain Dew syrup for pancakes.
Dude, you're killing me. That sounds awesome.
I think I'm going to work on that, do some experiments. And if anybody out there listening to the podcast wants to do it too, please send us an email and let us know how it goes. And by the way, we're not responsible for any burns that may occur for Mountain Dew syrup.
By the way, you've just reminded me before we continue about my, I forgot to tell my quest story for when we were.
To see the
when
movie.
I went to Avengers. Yes. Okay. So I was in Las Vegas this past week. It was on opening weekend. I was in Las Vegas for a wedding and I didn't get to go like for the midnight showing. I didn't even go on Friday. I ended up going on Saturday. We go to the wedding and then we're thinking, oh man, we really got to go see this movie. And we were on the strip. We actually stayed at a place called the Imperial Palace, which is right across the street from Caesar's Palace.
Oh, cool.
And so we're like, there's got to be a movie theater on the strip, right? There's got to be. So we jump online, find a place, order our tickets on Fandango or something like that. And then we're like, all right, well, it's not very far. We can just walk. It's probably like a 20-minute walk to where it is. Because driving on the, we didn't have a car. We like my mom had rented a car and we were just with her. And so me and my 15-year-old cousin, Carson, decide we are going to walk on the strip and we're going to the 10:55 show. Right.
Okay.
So now little did we realize, oh crap, it is Saturday, May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo. And we just are decided to walk a mile down the strip. So we're walking like it's ridiculous. And I've got like my cousin, he's like 15 with me. Right. It's just we're the only two who were willing to go to the movies at 11 o'clock. And so we're walking down the strip and it's like totally packed. And, you know, like in Vegas where you've got the guys hawking out the freaking pamphlets and whatever. I'm like,
business cards.
Exactly. Business cards. Right. It's like, okay, just keep your eyes up. Don't look at the ground. You know, don't take anything from these guys and just walk forward. And he was just like, oh my gosh, what's going on? All these, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we finally get there and it's not actually on the strip. It's around the corner from the strip. It's right across the street, not across the strip, but across the street the other way, along the strip.
Okay.
From like where the M&M store is and the Coke, the big Coke bottle, like that whole thing. It's like right there. And so we go around the corner and this is opening night of the best-selling movie of all time or opening weekend of the best-selling movie of all time. We get in there and there was no reason for us to pre-order our tickets because it's completely abandoned pretty much. We get into the theater after getting our tickets and there is it's like 10 minutes before the movie's about to start. There's literally like 6 people in the theater. Totally abandoned. Like nobody's there. We sit down right in the center of the theater. Probably another 4 people get into the theater and that was it.
I guess it might be explained by, you know, there are other forms of many, many other forms of entertainment out in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. The last thing that those people were worried about was going to see Avengers, right? I mean, it was... Yeah. The worst types of debauchery you've ever seen, right in the middle of the street, and it was crazy. And then afterwards, like, I'm not kidding, Las Vegas is the armpit of the universe. I'm not even joking. Like, I felt like the best parent in the world after that because we basically, I kid you not, walking home after the movie at probably 1:30 or 2 in the morning, I saw a mother with 2 small children in her arms. Walking down the strip, she was totally like in her like clubbing outfit and she was pulling a 2-year-old along or she was like in a stroller. I was like, what is going on? So anyway,
man,
that was my trek. It was pretty ridiculous, man.
You, sir, deserve some sort of award for braving Las Vegas on Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah. And there was a dude at the Flamingo, like right in front of the Flamingo, face down in the freaking asphalt, totally like unconscious. And we were like, what's going on? And there's about 4 other people around him. And I think, can you hear that?
Nope.
Okay. I think my grandma just turned the dishwasher on upstairs and it's really loud. But anyways, So yeah, pretty sure he might have been dead. I'm not sure.
Well then.
On that wonderful note, let's continue with the show, shall we?
Video Game Geek.
We shall, Zach. And in fact, while I was up at Massachusetts to present at the University of Massachusetts, I turned on my iPhone, checked Twitter, and then holy cannoli, my dream came true after like 5 years of waiting or more. The Elder Scrolls Online was finally announced. Game Informer, the magazine, has an exclusive, or had an exclusive, or at least it is for this month, for the month of June, in their magazine, or the June issue, which oddly enough comes out in May. They announced The Elder Scrolls Online, which we've been hearing rumbles about for like the better part of 5 years. ZeniMax, Bethesda's parent company, has ZeniMax Online, and then there've been hints coming out about it over the years that, hey, we're working on this, although they've never officially said anything, and it's here. It's here. That's, I mean, I don't know what to say other than, sweet God, it's finally here.
Now, okay, I'm looking at this here, screenshots and the like. Looking pretty, like they're going for the realistic look, right?
Somewhat.
Not going for super stylized.
Yeah. Well, there's a mix between stylized and realistic.
Right. And so, I now, huge confession here, I have never played an Elder Scrolls game in my life.
Oh,
ever.
Man, that is geek homework. I mean, you don't have to do it within by the next week, Zach. You got to do it sometime.
I have to play the entire Elder Scrolls franchise within 1 week.
Not even. I mean, just if there's a demo out there somewhere, like on one of those game streaming sites, like or services like OnLive or Gaikai. I mean, oh man, you got to take that thing for a spin.
I do need to give it a shot. I do. The only experience that I have with it is that I had a roommate. Probably before I got married, probably around 5 years ago ish. Mm-hmm. And he was playing what was before Skyrim?
Oblivion.
Yes, he was playing Oblivion. We used to always give him a hard time just because that game, the way he would jump, it was like the worst animation ever. It was just like he'd kind of jump up and kind of have his arms out, and it was like a really crappy animation. So that is my only memory or experience with it at all. It's just like kind of really ugly faces that the game would generate and kind of crappy animation.
Now for the time it came out, it was pretty mind-blowing, at least to me. It was supposed to be an Xbox 360 launch title, but then it got pushed back from launch by a couple of months to the following March. So it was maybe like a 4 or 5 month wait. And I remember buying this thing like just like a few days before my birthday and then playing it over and over and over for hours upon hours. And then for maybe the following year, I'd invite friends over, and then they'd bring their Xboxes, and we'd play back-to-back. Like, he'd have his Xbox and a small TV, and then I'd have my Xbox and another TV, and we'd be playing and, like, listening to music, and, hey, check out this place that I just found, or, hey, look what I just did. And we'd be playing back and forth, and it would, the thing we wanted was, well, it's like simple co-op. If it could be, like, Fable co-op. That's really all we needed. It didn't have to be all that involved, and that's frankly something I wanted in Skyrim as well. But now to have it as an MMO, I'm excited. But again, I'm hesitant because
it's interesting though. Yeah, like it's pretty cool. I'm not super excited about it again because I don't have any experience with the franchise. But just now, because it's simply, I play Warcraft still. Like I play WoW, and whatever they're gonna have to be, whatever Blizzard's next thing is for me,
yeah,
and because that's really the next MMO that I am, unless something really big comes along, that's what I'll be playing.
And one thing that I've always liked about Skyrim and the Elder Scrolls series is that, you know, it's real time, it's an action RPG, and you don't have, there's nothing about menu bars or anything like that. It's not turn based, it's far from it. But this thing, it's you know, they wanted to strike a balance between, you know, the single player, free roaming, sandbox kind of, well, not sandbox, but, you know, free roaming kind of adventure game, and then
open world, I think.
Open world, and make it familiar to those who, you know, play other MMOs like WoW. and Knights of the Old Republic and whatnot. So they kind of slimmed down the interface. There's not a quest log. It's more of like a map, like that has these different points, and you can just go and do things like in Oblivion or Skyrim. You can fight through this one cave, and then when you get to the end, there's some dude there that maybe was stuck there, and then he rewards you for like killing the baddies and giving him an exit out of that place. So they're trying to make it more freeform. It's going to be fully voice acted. It's in the third person perspective. Let's see. And also it's got the action bar, and that's making me a little nervous. But the silver lining is that
action bar similar to WoW? Is that what that is?
Yeah, like similar to most MMOs. However, right. Something that really gets me excited is that most of Tamriel is going to be in there. I mean, you can go to parts of all of the different provinces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're obviously going to make some parts not accessible for expansions and whatnot, but the fact is that you can go to all of the provinces. So this world is going to be huge.
Absolutely enormous, which is good. That's what you want, right? Like, that's what's going to give the game some legs. And there's lots of questing and lots of stuff like that. So that's good.
And as far as story goes, it takes place 1,000 years before Skyrim, I believe.
Cool.
So lots of good stuff in store for The Elder Scrolls Online. It's coming out for both PC and Mac, which I'm
good. That was what killed what's it called now?
Old Republic for you?
I would have tried Old Republic if it had a Mac client.
Well, frankly, if The Elder Scrolls Online was only Windows, I would have, if I couldn't dual boot for some reason on my Mac, I would have gone out and bought a PC. Not kidding. That's how much I want to play this game.
Nice.
In other news in the video game world is the, if you remember Space Quest, like way far back, early 90s is when the last Space Quest game came out.
Was it for?
PC.
Okay.
I'm not too familiar with it, but it's very quirky. These two guys who are the lead devs behind it and the two creators call themselves the Two Guys from Andromeda, and they've started a Kickstarter. They have a goal of reaching $500,000. They have 32 days left to go. They have 2,379 backers and have so far raised $116,520. So it looks like they're get there. I have my fingers crossed that they do, but it's a video you should definitely check out because it's space sci-fi kind of stuff, but it's also quirky. I can't really explain it, but I mean the game is going to come out for PC, Mac, Linux, iPad, and Android tablets. And of course, if you give them $15, you'll get a DRM-free version for the PC, Mac, Linux, and... the DRM-free version for the PC, and you'll also get one available for download on Mac, Linux, iPad, or the Android tablets.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm not familiar with the game, but hey, it's anything on Kickstarter lately, man. That's where stuff's going on. It's crazy.
That, and I mean sci-fi stuff? Oh, sure, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Fine by me.
Gadget Geek.
Moving into some gadget stuff, Will over at VGTribune.com pointed this article my way from TechRadar.com. Lots of folks, you know, they've got their laptops, and since laptops are meant to be mobile, they can't really pack a good graphics card in there. So they often use discrete graphics or an internal kind of baked-in graphics capabilities of a processor. But courtesy of hwtools.net, you can buy yourself an expansion thing that, okay, you have to have an express slot on your computer, and then you plug in this monstrosity of a device that you can hook. It's only $100, and you know, if you're going to buy a graphics card, a decent graphics card, it's going to be well over $100. And so it's a good investment or a good chunk of money, but you can plug this thing, an external graphics card, into your laptop with this thing, and then you can give it a lot more power to get some more graphical juice out of your system.
Oh, this is such a cool idea. This is so great. Because, I mean, nowadays I have a really hard time. Like, I don't think I could justify buying a full-size desktop computer that would give me the kind of graphics that some of, like, the actual dedicated desktop ones can. I just, like, a laptop is just way more logical of a purchase for me. And so just the idea that you could do this is just awesome.
Yeah, however,
I don't know if I ever would, but it's just a great idea anyways.
It does have some limits. You can visit the site. You can check out the link in the show notes, but it's not compatible with some laptop models, and you have to have Windows 7. So it's Windows.
That, yeah. Still a great idea, though. Like, I love this.
Yep. Well,
I just wish they had it for MacBook Pro is all.
Yeah. I mean, you can use it with XP and Vista, but Windows 7 is the preferred way to take care of this thing because some drivers and all that kind of stuff that can get real funky if you're not careful.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's the thing. I've never made a computer before, but from what I understand, it's you can screw it up pretty easy if you don't know what you're doing.
Just make sure to stay away from that static electricity or that it stays away from you. It was something that was making the rounds on the interwebs of, well, about 2-3 weeks ago. Yes, we know we're late in podcasting. Hopefully that won't happen again.
We're sorry.
Yeah. But if you haven't heard of it by now, the descriptive camera, a guy who was working on his final project for a class at actually the NYU Interactive Telecommunications Program, he made a project with it wasn't Arduino. It's actually something that I'll mention later because that's a topic in itself. But he made a camera. Okay, so that is he calls it a descriptive camera. So you take a picture, and then after a few seconds, it'll print out a description of what the picture is.
What? And yep. This actually works?
It works quite flawlessly. Now, how do you think this works, Zach? What kind of black magic?
I have no idea. Like, probably like a group of midgets with waiting for wireless
actually,
pictures coming in.
You are very, very, very close. He uses something called Amazon Mechanical Turk, which he takes, once the camera takes the image, it sends it to Amazon's Mechanical Turk service, and it's essentially a bunch of people who get paid a couple of cents to do a very simple task. And the simple task in his case is to describe the image. And so once they describe the image, that's what takes quite a few seconds, maybe like 30 seconds or so, they send it back, and once the camera gets the information or the data back from the Mechanical Turk, it prints it out. So it creates the illusion of the cameras doing it itself.
That is so cool.
Yeah, I was imagining, man, this would be cool if it could be done faster, and instead of outputting just text, if it could output Braille. And
that would be amazing.
Yeah, help blind folks and people with, you know, disabilities who have a hard time seeing. I think that'd be awesome.
Or you could even not even necessarily Braille, but have it connected to like a speaker or a headset or something.
Oh yeah.
Right, so you just take it, like you could have like a almost like a Google Goggles sort of thing where you press a button on it, takes a picture, and it's like looks like this, right?
Yeah,
that would be really, really cool.
His main motivation for doing it though was for like metadata, because you know we take all these pictures and then we don't tag them appropriately, so we have a lot of pictures that are practically unsearchable, other than like by date and camera model and the lens you used and whatnot.
Uh-huh. That's pretty cool.
So,
no, that's amazing.
Typically with these kinds of projects, people use, you know, the Arduino, the open source microcontroller. However, he used something called BeagleBoard, or the BeagleBone. The BeagleBoard project is actually started by Texas Instruments, or at least supported by Texas Instruments, you know, the calculator folks.
Right.
And
the TI-83 Plus
exactly.
was my calculator of choice in high school.
So, and of course, spelling things and then turning it upside down so people can read it. But they decided to throw their weight behind an open source, not microcontroller, but actually a working Linux PC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's, well, it's, I wouldn't say PC. Well, it's, technically it's a working Linux PC. It's not a microcontroller because it runs, it has an ARM processor that runs, I believe, at 1 gigahertz, and it runs a version of Linux, Angstrom Linux, I believe. And so you can use the power of Linux to develop on this thing. It's not just an underpowered kind of megahertz, an Arduino that runs on megahertz rather than a whole gigahertz.
Uh-huh. So
it's got some power behind it, and I guess you can use most of the same sensors that are used with the Arduino, because, well, for the most part, sensors are just sensors.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, if you're into hacking and making and whatnot, definitely check out beagleborg.org. They've got some cool stuff going on, and it is slightly more expensive. Well, probably double the cost, or maybe 2.5 times the cost of an Arduino Uno. It clocks in at $89, but I mean, if you're going to get one of the Arduino Megas, which are about $60 to $70, I think, I mean, you might as well buy one of these things, because it's got Linux on it, and hell, I mean, with Linux, the world is your oyster.
Indeed it is. That's cool, dude.
It looks like we have a call, well, probably from a week or two ago, but we're still going to play it anyway. It's from Jake Brandon. He used to be Hero of Time 64 on Twitter, but over the course of us being off air, he underwent a metamorphosis into Hero Proc.
That's through the pupa stage and into the beautiful butterfly stage known as Hero Proc.
Replete with a new avatar. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is his call.
Hi, Geek Improvement Crew. This is Jake, aka Hero Proc on Twitter. I'm just driving down the road here, and I got to thinking about this past week, the Hobbit in 48 frames has been a hot topic in news. It just got me thinking about how in gaming, we're always trying to, we're striving to get the highest FPS. And how, you know, 30 frames is usually the minimum, and 60, anything beyond 60 is unnoticeable to the human eye. And it's just kind of funny how, you know, for gamers, we always want that high FPS mark. And 24 frames, which is the film standard, just isn't, it just goes to show that I think we're just going to have to get used to this new frame rate. And it's going to look really strange at first. But I really think it's something that we can get to. And I feel like Peter Jackson is doing what George Lucas did, which was he was always trying to push for this digital conversion of video and audio. And I feel like Peter Jackson is going to follow up and really try to push this new frame rate. I'm still excited for it, and I'll see it no matter what. But just interesting to think about. But I'll catch you guys later. Bye.
Well, first of all, thanks for calling, Jake. And please don't be a stranger. And I think I for the most part agree. I'm pretty sure it's going to look very weird to me, especially since I've always kind of noticed the difference between, you know, why does my home video not have the same colors as a movie? Just, you know, the color correction's always funky, and it just doesn't look the same. And, you know, frames per second as well. But I'm going to, well, first of all, I guess I should say, because they are filming The Hobbit in 3D and putting so much thought into it. The first time I watch it, I'm going to watch it in 3D. Because, I mean, even the concept art was made in 3D.
Like, they've got exactly
two guys working next to each other doing it. And that just and I'm not making that up. They
really?
Yeah. They, in one of their behind-the-scenes videos, it was probably the first or second one, they showed two guys working, one with a red pencil and one with a blue pencil, working on concept art right next to each other.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. Now, I think it's interesting, just as far as the discussion of video games versus movies, I think part of the reason why we really, if you think more of into the maybe the over analytical social psychology or psychology of it, the reason that we go to the movies is to escape and to kind of sit back and be washed over by the fantasy of it, right? The fact that we're not actually, this is something that we're detached from, but we're sort of, we're not actually a part of it. We're just enjoying it. And so the fact that it's a little bit less than reality is a little bit more acceptable in cinema than it is in video games. Whereas in video games, especially in stuff like Twitch video games and stuff where you're really worried about high graphic performance and frame rate and stuff like that, you want it to be the highest possible so that your reaction and your, you know, you can really respond the way you need to. Necessarily that you need to, but you get what I'm saying there?
There's a level of truth to that, but I think, at least for me, mostly, it's not necessarily the, you know, like the Twitch reaction. It's also a form of escape, you know, a way to relax, a way to get into the game. And I guess my biggest problem is probably, like Jake said, one of getting used to it. And also,
yeah, I definitely agree with that still.
But also, though, because when the frame rate is off or the color correction is off, things just look, it's funny, things look fake, and they don't really look fake. In fact, I guess they look, I don't know, I wouldn't say more real. I mean, they just look badly produced. It looks like a father got grabbed his VHS cam, his like mini VHS cam, and went to the local high school play to film his son, and you know that's what it looks like. But again, I guess it's just something that we'll have to get used to. And if you want to pull in some more sociology, French sociologist Pierre Bourdieu would argue that, you know, this is what we're used to. We're in the doxa. This is we don't know any different because we haven't really been exposed to it, and it only feels wrong because it's different. So again, it's a wait and see. I don't know.
Exactly. And you know, it's funny, it's kind of the same thing too, especially before, like the very first time I used my iPad, my new iPad that has a Retina display, I was absolutely blown away by it, absolutely amazing. Then I even looked up and it seemed like the world was not as high resolution as my iPad was. That's literally the feeling that I got from it the first time. I was like, man, I need new glasses or something. But you know, again, as I kind of got used to it and things like that, it will take some time for us to get used to it. But I definitely think that it's pretty crazy how even within the last 2 years, the display or like the industry and the technology and all that behind displays lately, that's the cutting edge right now between high resolution displays and higher frame rates and all that sort of stuff. It's a pretty cool time for that sort of technology. So
yeah, it's the high, I'm not surprised. Craze. You know, the whole thing about, man, even reality is this high res, man, reminds me of how I felt after the Avengers. I felt, you know, I'm not sure I want to live in a reality where I can't fight space aliens. I mean, I want to fight space aliens with a Captain America shield or as a big green monster or in a metal suit of power or with a giant hammer.
And then you ran to Target and bought yourself a big foam hammer.
No, I was thinking though, you know, I kind of
want to go buy one of those.
I thought to myself, you know, there's no way I'm going to be able to build myself an Iron Man suit. There's no way I'm going to have that awesome of a hammer. There's no way I'm as sexy as Black Widow. And the only possibility that I could become someone in the Avengers is I got to go buy myself a bow and I got to start practicing. Gotta become Hawkeye, man. I gotta be that good. I mean, that's the most realistic way for me to embody someone in the Avengers. But also, I guess since that's really, really, really geeky, I should also mention you might be a geek if you have the habit of spelling habit with two B's because of the word hobbit.
Yes,
you have no idea how many times I've done that.
That's terrible.
Because of Hobbit, Because Hobbit has two B's, I have the need to spell habit with two.
Oh, that's terrible. I love it.
And I guess the last thing on the list is something you found while surfing the interwebs.
Yeah, just something to wrap us off for the day. This is something that they talked about this week on the Current Geek segment over on the Morning Stream podcast. But it's basically just maker skill patches. They're like the merit badges for makers, you know, and things like that. So check out our link in the show notes. Chat room link is not that one. Hang on just a sec. And one more try.
The patches are iron-on, and they each cost $3.95. For example, you can have an LED skill badge. You can have a round solar panel skill badge, microcontroller skill badge, a Linux skill badge, a Ruby skill badge, a Python skill badge, and the list goes on.
A hacked Kinect skill badge, all sorts of stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. I like that.
And of course, the magic blue smoke monster skill badge for when you run too much power through a circuit or something.
Yeah, and so it's pretty funny. We were talking about this before the show, and my only complaint is they are not all the same shape, and I think they should be. But that's just me. That's just the little bit of OCD perfectionism coming out, where I think that if you're going to have a set of badges, they should all look the same.
Oh,
but that's just me.
By the way, before we end the podcast, I think it might be worthwhile to read Google Voice's translation, or transcription, I should say, of Jake's call. Geek Improvement, Curtis, is Jake Pick a hero prod hunter? I'm just driving down the road here, and I got to thinking about this past week, the hot button 40 range. It's been a hot top news. I just got me thinking about how you can't give me. We're always trying to. Should. We're striving to get the highest afternoon, and how. You know 30-30 Frank Hughes of the minimum and 60. Anything beyond 6 to use a noticeable received. And it's kind of funny how, you know, for gamers, it's we always want the high FP period SP. Mark and 34, I'm sorry, 24 frames, which the film standard just isn't he yet and I just. I just goes to show that I think we're just going to have to get used to this new frame, or A, and he is going to look really strange at first, but I really think it's something that we can, too, and I feel like Peter Jackson is doing with George Lucas, which was he was always trying to push for the digital conversion of video and audio, and I feel like Peter Jackson is going to follow up and really try to push this new frame right. I'm so excited for LCAT, no matter how, what, but just distance in think about, but I'll catch you guys later.
All right, well, first of all, good luck on the LCAT, and Peter Jackson and George Lucas, congratulations on your marriage or your oncoming relationship here, apparently. Budding romance there. That's good. And what was it? 30-30 texts or something like
that. I'm sorry if it was tedious. I just have to emphasize.
That's great. I love that.
You need to get on fixing that.
I think, okay, anybody else who is the I'm never calling again, he says. No, that is exactly what I hereby promise that we will read those. So call in more often, yes, and we will get the Google Voice to text.
I meant to read it the first time he called, and
what we should do is we should put them into
the show notes.
No, into the voice or the text to voice thing on the.
Yes, that would be amazing. You know what? Live right now, let's give that a try. What kind of excerpt would you want? Well, what was your favorite part, Zach? Oh God, it's starting again.
Just the part of the part about George Lucas and Peter Jackson. Something there. Just start a little bit before that. This makes good radio, folks, by the way.
We can. Too, and I feel like Peter Jackson is doing with George Lucas, which was he was always trying to push.
Oh, that's terrible. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
Anyway, if you want to follow our shenanigans on Twitter, you can follow us at Geek Improvement. You can follow myself at Alexis Santos. And where can they find you, Zach?
They can find me over at zacherickson.com. That's ZACERICKSON.com.
And if you want to call in like Jake and also have opportunity to ridicule Google Voice's transcription services, you can give us a ring at 65-RING-GEEK. That's 657-464-4335. And of course, you can call us in to, or call in to tell us about your thoughts on something we talked about, something that we missed, or even if you have your own, you might be a geek if, like my whole hobbit slash habit thing. You can also send us an email at podcast@geekimprovement.com and feel free to join our Steam group, aptly named Geek Improvement. So for Zach and myself and the terrible Geek Improvement, the terrible Google Voice transcription services, this has been episode 12 of the Geek Improvement Podcast. We hope to see you next week. Thanks for stopping by.
See you.